He did the same with the other four boilers and spent a precious few minutes barricading the doors to the power plant with heavy drums and placing a live Claymore mine attached to a tripwire. Exiting through the back door, J.B. rigged grins on both sides of the threshold. The two men tied the dark blue bandanas on their heads once again, then smeared fresh grease over their faces and melted into the night. The trap was set, the mission complete. All the companions had to do was to leave, and the rest would take care of itself. Baron Sheffield and his triple cursed sky machine were already dead and buried. They just didn't know it yet. Following the wall, Jack moved from shadow to shadow, heading back for Mildred, when a door unexpectedly swung open in the slave quarters, catching him in a bright light. Instantly, he raced around a corner of the brick building, then paused and drew a knife. Maybe they hadn't seen him. It could be only a single overseer checking the slaves. Then Jack heard the sounds of boots on gravel coming from both directions and knew he was caught. Sheathing the blade, he softly worked the bolt on the Kalashnikov, a spare clip already in his hand. Anything less than 20, and he could chill them all. Suddenly, a Sekhman shouted from above.
I got him!
Lightning fast, Jack realized the danger and tried to dodge, but somebody fell on him from the roof, and the Kalashnikov went flying. Headbutting his assailant, Jack drew a knife and slit the man's throat from ear to ear. A hand grabbed him by the hair, but only got a fistful of blue cloth. Rolling free of the corpse, Jack stood and fired the Colt Python, a booming .357 Magnum round, illuminating the alleyway between the two buildings. The heavy slug drove a blue shirt backward, with most of his face gone. Then another assailant tackled Jack around the ankles, and he hit the wall, losing the hand cannon. A third Sekhman kicked the blaster away as a dozen more raced into the narrow passageway. The albino teenager was knocked to the ground and the blues piled on, driving the air from his lungs. Partially pinned, Jack clawed desperately in the grass for his blaster, but it was nowhere to be found. Cursing vehemently, he pulled out a pair of knives and wildly stabbed anything nearby, arms, legs, butts, and ribs. Men cursed and started pounding him with fists. They wanted him alive. Somebody stomped on his wrist, pinning his left hand. Jack sliced with the right, opening the belly of the snarling Sekhman, warm blood and entrails pouring out from the ghastly wound. That bought him some space, and Jack pulled out another blade, doing his worst. Screaming in pain, the blue scrambled to get away, and he was free. Rising to his knees, Jack stabbed a man in the groin. The blade opened a vital artery, and the man paled instantly from blood loss. The neutered Sekhman writhed in agony, clutching the blade that had removed his manhood. Jack tried to yank the knife free, but the man's death grip was too strong. Releasing the trap knife, Jack drew another leaf-shaped blade when somebody grabbed him from behind. The attacker released the teenager instantly as his fingers fell to the ground, the razor blade sewn into Jack's collar neatly severing them. Spinning, Jack threw the knives. A blade caught a short Sekhman in the chest and he fell. But the other trooper took the knife in an arm and turned sideways to kick Jack in the face. Blood filled his mouth, and Jack spat it into his adversary's face, drawing his last blade while digging for a grin in his pocket. The bombs were ticking. He had to leave before this whole complex went sky high. Then something slammed into him from behind, and the world started to spin out of control. A blaster fired, and he felt white-hot pain in his leg. Dropping the knife, he clutched the wound and tried to shout a warning to the companions, but blood was pouring down his throat from his broken nose, and all he could produce was a horrid gurgling. As he got the grin loose, another Sekhman rose before him and shoved a rifle butt toward him. Jack tried to duck out of the way and caught the blow in his wounded shoulder. Pain erupted and his arm went limp, dangling loosely. Then the unprimed grin fell to the ground from his numb fingers, useless and inert. Jack tried to run again, but the blues swarmed over the teenager, pounding him with rifle butts and fists until there was only the sound of meaty thumps. When Ryan and J.B. returned to Mildred and the Rope, the men found the other companions waiting for them nervously.
Trouble?
Ryan looked out into the ville. All was quiet, with no outward sign of undue activity from the blues.
Where's Jack?
I think the blues got him. Saw some muzzle flashes in the western section of the ville and then heard Jack cry out.
Can't be dead.
Christy looked at the dark buildings, a hand partially raised as if feeling the air.
Anything, madam?
Nothing.
Biting back a curse, Ryan glanced at his wrist chron. 20 minutes remained until the whole valley was one huge fireball of steam and shrapnel. Clearly, the others wanted to go after the teenager, but they always followed his lead. Every cell in his brain told Ryan to leave the teenager as a casualty of war. Friends died. That was a fact of life. Finnegan was gone. Old Pete, Hunniker, maybe even the traitor himself. Everybody died eventually. Soft thunder rumbled overhead, the clouds sealing off the moon and extinguishing its silvery light. In spite of logic and reason, Ryan already knew the answer. Maybe Sheffield and the Blues could leave a friend alive in the hands of the enemy, but not him. This wasn't a question of tactics, it was a matter of honor. Ryan worked the bolt on his Steyr SSG-70.
Well, what the hell are you waiting for? Let's go get him back.
JB checked his wrist chron.
20 minutes until the first charge goes off. That's mighty tight.
Buy us another 10, then get out. We'll meet you at the redoubt.
Do my best.
The armorer offered his hand. Ryan took it, and the men shook, saying goodbye in the only way they could. Neither expected to see the other alive again.
Want some company, John?
Mildred stepped closer. Smiling, JB touched her cheek.
Only slow me down, Millie. Cover your ass, and I'll concentrate on mine.
She nodded, and he took off into the night.
Guy be with you.
Ryan headed toward the Quonset hut.
Come on, let's see what we can find.
Staying low to the ground, Ryan followed the tracks the teenager had made in the hard ground. The light was poor, but he had been carrying a lot of explosives, and that made the difference. They were halfway to the hut, near the slave quarters, when Ryan stopped cold and knelt on the soil, studying the tracks.
3 men, no. 4 killed. Maybe 10 more. Jack lost his blaster, was wounded. Tried to run, and they got him from behind.
Still alive, then?
Ryan stood.
He's alive. They dragged him away, limping, then lifted him off the ground.
Probably fainted. How the hell did they beat Jack in a knife fight?
Maybe they hit his bad shoulder. It was hurting more than he would admit.
Time?
Doc's Kalashnikov was at quarter arms. His sword stick stuck through his belt in lieu of a scabbard.
15 minutes.
Where now? The tracks go in a dozen directions from here. Which one has Jack?
Ryan couldn't tell, and chose one at random. The boots were in the best condition, so those were most likely the officers who would be interrogating the youth.
This way.
He took off at an easy lope. Time was against them now, and every second counted. When JB arrived at the power plant, the noise of the pistons inside was steadily growing in volume. Worried, he glanced through the filthy windows and saw that several of the safeties had blown, and steam was filling the building from floor to rafters. The grime on the office windows washed away under the boiling assault. The temperature inside was lethal. Without anybody at the controls, the boilers were running away, building to an explosion of their own, even without his charges. As he watched, another valve burst, shooting through the steam on a white jet and smashing through the office window. Backing away, the armorer paused and started to go for the tripwire of the grin at the back door, then stayed his hand, turned, and walked away. Even if he could cut the booby traps fast enough, there was no way through that cloud of steam. It would ace him in under a heartbeat. The plas would be okay. The charges were out of the way of the direct venting, but the only doors were smack in the path. The plant had to have been designed that way, so that the doors could be blown from the exterior and the power plant would cool down naturally without any loss of life. Now it only meant the place was death for anybody trying to sneak inside. The bombs would explode in 12 more minutes, and there was nothing anybody could do about it. Jack lay limply on the rough-hewn wooden boards, one eye swollen shut, but his teeth were still in place. That had seemed to enrage the Blues, and they converged again to concentrate a lot of their kicks on his mouth. A sergeant stepped forward.
That's enough.
The gang of men stepped away from the bloody form on the floor.
You're gonna talk now, Mutie?
Although both lips were swollen and cut, Jack managed to smile, the taste of blood filling his mouth. One Blue snarled and stabbed Jack in the thigh with a fork from the dining table. The teenager shuddered, but didn't speak.
Strip him, then chain him to the wall.
Jack was stripped, then hauled across the room and chained spread-eagle to the brick wall. Cold suddenly washed over the teenager, and he found himself rudely awake, his dripping hair blocking most of his vision.
Again!
Another bucket of